Americans for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Well, today we're going to talk with two attorneys who specialize in legal issues for veterans. But first, we're still receiving comments about last Friday's interview about the televangelist and former megachurch pastor, Paula White, who's now a spiritual advisor to President Trump. Here's what one more listener had to say.
If Paula White is Donald Trump's spiritual advisor, most people do not know the severity of the danger of this. And understand that if you're not a Christian, religious racketeering is the best thing to get into. And this goes back to the revolution. You get out of paying taxes. You can shake people down for cash tax-free. And that's exactly what these people do. And it's legal. And that is the heart of the matter today, why they're fanatically Republican, because they love money. They worship money. And they love their tax breaks.
Well, there's a listener comment that came in yesterday about last Friday's program. I'm Rob Loright. This is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Well, with all the wars the U.S. has been involved in since World War II, there are an enormous number of veterans living in the U.S. There were about 20.4 million U.S. veterans in 2016, according to data from the Department of Veterans Affairs, representing a little less than 10% of the total U.S. population. The number of homeless veterans across America is estimated by housing and urban development officials to be roughly 40,000. An estimated 6.5% of all current veterans who've left the military since 2001 have left without an honorable discharge, denying them some basic services. That's a higher percentage of less than honorable discharges after either Vietnam or World War II. We're joined now by two attorneys who specialize in representing veterans, David Corey and Rick Hurley. They've joined us on or near Veterans Day for the past 7 years. And Rick and David, good to see you again. Thanks for coming by WMNF.
Hey, great seeing you, Rob. Thanks for having us.
Those statistics I read are interesting. And then I saw this story yesterday that Tammy Baldwin, who's one of the representatives in Congress from Wisconsin, was in Mexico yesterday. And she was celebrating Veterans Day with veterans who've been deported. They've served in the U.S. military, and now they're part of the rounding up process where they're sending veterans to Mexico. Do you guys ever represent veterans who've been deported?
I've heard of that situation. I personally have not yet represented a veteran in that situation. But it's also tied to to another issue, which is veterans that may have developed, let's say, post-traumatic stress and then were discharged with so-called bad paper, bad conduct discharge, and then that gives the military another avenue, and particularly if, depending on their citizenship status, it might be another basis for the government to end up deporting them. Mm. And but I have heard of groups of veterans.
And then the other issue that we run into all the time is that the government just doesn't want to pay these claims. And if they can figure out any way to either not pay or reduce their claims that they have to pay, the compensation claims, they're going to do it. Yeah. And if deporting them is one way of doing it, then that's what they're going to do.
All right. And I misspoke. It wasn't Tammy Baldwin. Baldwin was Tammy Duckworth, who's a senator from, I think she's from Wisconsin, or she's from Illinois. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So we're going to open up the phone lines today and offer some help to veterans who need help, especially, as you've heard, if you're struggling with your VA benefits. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to talk about a range of issues for veterans. And what's new in the last year? What would you say the most significant thing that's happened to veterans in terms of their legal rights is?
Well, as of August of 2017, the VA Disability Compensation Claims Appeal System was dramatically changed by Congress.
And what does that mean?
It means that there's more ways that they're basically trying to deny paying these claims. They're putting more and more barriers in front of veterans. I'm sure we're going to get some phone calls today from veterans who are going to be complaining about that specific issue. Every single day, I run into situations with veterans and people at the VA. I know a lot of people at the VA now. And they always say, oh, no, it's not about the money. It's not about the money. And it's clearly about the money.
Can you give us an example without naming the person or, you know, without naming the branch of service they're in? But can you give us an example where they're facing even further delays from the VA?
So here's an example. Take a veteran who's struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. The range for compensation is 0%, 10%, 30%, 50%, 70%, and 100%. If you look at the subjective standard for a claim that's at 30% versus 50%, the three of us could sit here all afternoon and try to figure out what is the difference. None of us are trained in psychology. We're not wordsmiths. It would really take a lot to figure out what the difference is between a 30% rating and a 50% rating. However, what's the difference? About $250 a month.
That's big.
That's big. So if you give a veteran 30%, a lot of these veterans take the 30 and they go, wow, I got 30. I'm just going to take that. Everyone's telling me if I push it, they're going to take that away. They put that fear in them all the time. So I'll take my 30 and go off and be happy with my money. Easily they could have gotten the 50. The VA could have given them the 50, but they decide not to because of the 250. And don't look at in terms of an individual veteran. Look at it in terms of the tens of thousands of veterans who are similarly situated, times $250 a month. That's the issue.
You say they could have gotten it. What steps would they have had to take to get the extra $250?
You appeal.
And people give up before the appeal.
Exactly. Because, you know, they go to some VFWs or these posts and they say, no, just take your 30. You'll be just... If you push it, they may take away that 30, which they could do if they wanted to, but they won't. And if they did, we jump on board and we beat that. But the point is the VA, without David and I having to get involved, the veteran should have just gotten the 50.
David Corey, jump in.
Well, the bill that Rick referenced was signed into law in August of 2017, but it took 18 months. To go into full effect. So it was February of this year, 2019, it went fully into effect. And the short answer that I want to give to the veterans is this law has basically helped the VA. The background was, let's speed up the process, let's speed up the appeals. But in doing so, the law was written in a way that it makes it easier for the VA and tougher for the veterans. And that's what they need to know. The effect is, veterans need to do more when they first file a claim to build their own case. Do not blindly give faith to the VA, which unfortunately many of these veteran service organizations put too much blind because they work very closely. They have free office space from the VA. They're all kind of in cahoots and to some extent.
There's a great deal of trust on the part of the VA service organizations.
Almost too much blind trust. So here's a quick example. I had a client recently, had a veteran service organization fill out his claim form, but offered really nothing further. Blindly expected trusted the VA to do the right thing. And the veteran had a severe lung disability that was first officially diagnosed a year and a half after his service. Well, the VA for that condition had a rule that said, if it was diagnosed within 1 year, we'll presume it was from your service. Well, the first diagnosis was a year and a half. The point is, his VSO did not even do something as basic as have him write up a detailed statement about the toxic exposures he had in the Navy, and there were several incidents he could have cited, that the medical records never tell the whole story. And if the case had been properly prepared, he would not now be facing years of appeal. And the VA's so-called duty to assist, the VA is not very good at doing that. And in fact, under this law, they eliminated the VA's duty to assist on any appeal stage. So it's put more of the burden on these veterans. They may get a quicker decision, but it may be a quicker denial. And the first step on appeal might be just more of a rubber stamp of what already happened. So it's something to be aware of. That's legally a major change since we were on the show last year.
Well, we're talking with Rick Hurley and David Corey. They're attorneys that specialize in veterans issues, and they represent veterans in their claims to the VA. And this is WMNF in Tampa. If you've got a comment, you can email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. Rick.
So taking David's situation a step further, what's the remedy for these veterans? The remedy is, you now have to appeal to the Board of Veteran Appeals, which is the federal court, okay? Now you'd think, okay, now up there you have judges, you have lawyers, and by and large, you get very good decisions, favorable decisions for the veteran, which is terrific. The problem is when you file that appeal, now you're waiting 18 months or 2 years down the road again. Take a veteran who's 75 years old and he's waiting for that decision. Now he's got to wait 2 more years. So what the VA has successfully done now is they've basically kicked the can down the road and let the Board of Veteran Appeals handle it, so that they turn around and they say, look at our numbers. Look at how all these cases we're getting rid of. No, you're not. You're just taking those cases and putting them in a different pile.
At the top of the show, I mentioned that there are a 500,000 veterans since 2001 that have gotten less than honorable discharges. How important is it to get an honorable discharge? And what happens if you get less than honorable?
Well, it's important that they receive an honorable or a general under honorable conditions. If they receive, and those are two administrative characterizations, if they receive the next lower one, which administratively is called an under other than honorable, or even worse, if they were court-martialed and receive either a bad conduct discharge or a dishonorable discharge, they're going to find that their VA benefits are eliminated, which means they could have clearly service-connected disabilities. There's no question about it, but simply because they were kicked out under negative circumstances. And there are many situations, and the DOD and the VA have finally acknowledged about 5 years ago that, yes, they're veterans, let's say, with combat-related post-traumatic stress. They start self-medicating with drugs. They get kicked out for drugs. Now they have the so-called bad paper. They're not eligible for very much as far as the VA. And so it's important that veterans are aware of this. The VA is aware of it. DOD is aware of it. But they may have to go through the process of a discharge upgrade to upgrade that characterization, either through the Discharge Review Board that each service has or the Board for Correction of Military Records.
Let me read from the New York Times about one of these cases that you're talking about right there, David. The New York Times reported about a 36-year-old ex-Marine named Tyson Manker. Manker is one of those veterans today that has had a bad paper discharge. 15 years ago, his record was exemplary. He was then the top-rated Marine in his platoon, the first promoted to corporal, and then during the 2003 invasion of Iraq was put in charge of his own squad. And now I've lost the second page to this. Let's see if I can find it real quick. Let's see if we can find it. Anyway, so the Times went on to report this guy got all high marks when he was in the military. He was about to leave, and they found him smoking marijuana. And so he got a less than honorable discharge, even though up until the point that he was smoking marijuana, he was an exemplary service member. And and now he's got bad papers. That means that he doesn't have that automatic access to the VA benefits like education or medical care, that sort of thing.
Well, right, and you know, the public may wonder, because they'll read stories or they'll find out that the VA spends hundreds of billions of dollars, and yet they'll see people on the street that say they're homeless. And how can that be? Well, Rob, the situation you've described is how that can be. You have veterans that were kicked out with bad paper; they're not eligible for disability compensation from the VA. And the bad paper has another effect. You go to an employer looking for a job, they say, let's see your DD-214. What does it say? Dishonorable discharge? Well, good luck trying to get a lot of kind of jobs with that, or to get certain professional licenses. So I've represented a veteran recently who was court-martialed, received a bad conduct discharge, but it was upgraded. He went to nursing school. And the nursing school did their background check and said, oh, we see you were arrested, or you had an arrest warrant for desertion from the Marine Corps. He eventually, with my assistance, he won that battle. But the point is that bad paper can follow you in civilian life. And when you're in your early 20s and you're trying to transition to civilian life, just finding a job, a good job, can be difference between success in life or not.
Is it possible to fix that less than honorable discharge?
It is, and veterans have two avenues. A discharge review board. Every branch of service has a discharge review board. You've got 15 years from your discharge to get that upgraded. Some veterans, believe it or not, wait even longer. They do have the Board for Correction of Military Records, which has a 3-year but it's waivable in the interest of justice, a three-year deadline. But you have two avenues, at least, to try to get that discharge upgraded. And it's definitely worth the fight to do that.
All right, we're going to take some phone calls. We're talking with two attorneys who are experts in veterans issues. They're David Corey and Rick Hurley, and this is the seventh year they've been doing the program here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you've got a question for David or Rick, you can email us in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to our first caller. DJ's in Tampa. DJ, thank you for calling. What's your question for our experts?
Great morning, Rob. This is DJ Smell So Good checking in. Hey, guys, want to first thank you for your service. And as a fellow vet, I want to take time to thank all the vets out there that have served and just share a little personal information. I just got recently had all my, I had some open cases with the state, what I now call the state courthouse versus the VA courts. And all my cases were transferred to the VA courts, which I had no idea even existed. But I've been so blessed to have my cases actually heard in front of the VA courts. And it's been a miracle. I don't know what's going on with the state courts versus the VA courts, but when I went into the VA courts for the first time, they took cases all the way back from 2009, which I didn't even know had court calls still pending that had my driver's license like in limbo, never received notifications or anything. The VA courts took my cases and the court calls, like over $1,000 worth of court calls in less than 20 minutes. The judge wiped everything to zero, wished me good blessings, and he even looked through a couple of the wordings in my cases and said that you have civil rights issues. Now, I've been dealing with the court system over, truthfully, 17 years since 2002, and truthfully, since I came out of the military. It's been, you know, as vets, we receive the foot, you know what I'm saying, from law enforcement instead of the hand to help us out. So I just really want to know, I really want to, you know, just put that out there. So if any vets know, starting 2020, they are expanding the program. The program was only once a year, which is probably why a lot of vets did not know of the program. But they are expanding the program, and it will be every month starting in 2020. So they will be transferring all of the vet cases out of the state courts into the VA courts and handling these cases properly and not sitting up here giving us frivolous charges, mainly court calls that leads to driver license suspensions and all this other kind of madness that, you know, it's just really unfair when it comes to a vet.
All right. DJ, thanks a lot. I'm glad it worked out for you. Thank you. And so is that, have you heard that story before, Rick?
Yeah, he's referring to the stand down court, which does meet once a year. But first of all, DJ, thank you for your service. And thank you for bringing this up. What DJ is also alluding to is there's a thing called the Veterans Court. The Veterans Court exists in it's county by county. Hillsborough has one, Pinellas has one, and you're seeing them around the state of Florida starting to pop up.
I think Sarasota has one too.
Yeah, and they're great. They're absolutely great because what they do is they take a veteran and they pull him out of the state court system and they put him in the Veterans Court system. So the remedy for the veteran is a lot friendlier, and it gives the veteran basically a second chance.
So the people in these local county veterans courts are experts in military issues.
Yes, and there's the way they set it up is each defendant, each veteran gets a mentor, and that mentor acts like a probation officer with the veteran.
How can you choose as somebody who's got a problem? Can you choose to get transferred to the local county veterans court?
So what the veteran needs to do is if he has a charge pending in one of the state courts in, let's say, Hillsborough County. First thing he wants to do is go up to somebody, at the judge or the prosecutor, and say, I'm a veteran. Can I get into the veterans court program? I get these phone calls all the time asking me to represent them in state court, and I say, look, you don't need me. Just ask them about the veterans court program because it's a terrific, terrific program.
All right. Let's go to Tim in Tampa who's got a question. Tim, thanks for calling in to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, I got a quick question here. I'm 20% disabled, and I retired 20 years ago. I did not push that because all they did was subtract 20% of my pay from my original pay and don't tax it. So my only benefit, really, from the federal government for being 20% is the money I save on taxes on $200, which is about $20. Now, I thought they changed the law saying they're supposed to put that 20% on top of my pay. Is that true, or was it a certain percentage I had to be, 30, 40, 50% for them to put it on top of my pay?
Tim, you need to get to at least 50% right now. There's a long history to that law, and the law you're referring to is basically concurrent receipt of both military retired pay for those that served for 20 years and got a military pension, and then became disabled and received VA disability compensation on top of that. Basically, the law as it's written right now is if you're at least 50% VA disability rated, then you should be able to receive both. So the fact you're 20%, I don't know the circumstances of your case, but it is possible to seek a higher rating if your disability has worsened.
But see, that's my point, though. Whether I'm 1% or 50%, I'm disabled, service-connected disability, but I don't get that money on top of my pay because I'm less than that 50%. That doesn't make sense to me. It should be anyone who's service-connected disability, whether they're 1% or 50%, that should be on top of my pay.
Tim, I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, that's the way Congress has written the law, and it took many years of fighting even to get to the point that it's at. And there's all sorts of inequities. I'll give you another really quick example. Let's say a veteran dies and his death was service-connected, and the veteran's spouse then becomes eligible for dependency indemnity compensation. If the veteran had served 20 years and he or she was receiving a pension and had elected to receive survivor benefit plan, which is a paid-in annuity, the way the law is written now is that the surviving spouse can't receive both dependency indemnity compensation and survivor benefit plan. You can't receive both. You can receive the higher of the two, and Congress did decide to kind of compromise and offer about a $300 differential there. But that's another inequity, because Here's the deal. They have paid. You've done your 20 years. You've paid into survivor benefit plan, which is a monthly deduction for your retirement pay. You die. You hope that your surviving spouse gets whatever you've elected from survivor benefit plan. And then you find out it can't receive the dependency indemnity as well. So there's a lot of inequities. That's just another example.
Can you explain? But maybe you know more about that history than I do, because what made them cut off at the... Is it all about the money?
I think it's all about the money.
It's all about the money. It's always been about the money.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're sitting there telling me you want to do this for the veterans and do this for the veterans, when that law came into effect, I was pissed, because only reason I did not push my percentage higher, because all they did was subtract it from my pay. So I said, you know, it ain't worth the headache.
Well, like I say, it's 50% is the threshold now. So, you know, if your circumstances are such that your disabilities have worsened, it may be worth the fight financially. So,
well, this is something I probably need to talk with my congressman. That doesn't make a lot of sense. This guy, because he's service disability, he gets 50%, and that goes on top of it. That's a huge difference.
Yeah. Right.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot. Thanks. And if you've got a question about your VA benefits, we've got two attorneys here that can maybe help you out. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. David Corey and Rick Hurley are our guests. They're attorneys here in the Tampa Bay area. And let's take another phone call. We're going to go to Pedro in St. Petersburg. Pedro, thanks a lot for calling in. What's your question?
Hey, hi. It's not really a question, it's a comment. But first, Rick and David, or Corey, thank you both for helping us veterans. We all appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. The reason why I'm calling is I just wanted to share something on YouTube. There's this guy, Brian Reese, and VA Claims Insider Mastermind, and there's a whole bunch of free videos on YouTube to help one with their claim. The VA's not going to come to your door and knock and say, I don't think you could be 20%. Anyways, I just want to call and share that with my fellow veterans. Thank you all for serving my brotherhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Thank you for your service.
I want to ask you about burn pits. In the last two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, there are these things called burn pits, and they're causing a lot of problems, health problems, for people returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. First of all, what is a burn pit?
Burn pits are large open-air areas that were used by the hundreds in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, during wartime, military operations generate waste, just like we do in the civilian world. The question is, how do you get rid of it? In the middle of combat, historically, you just burn the stuff, pour some fuel on it, and burn it. Well, the problem is, particularly some of these larger bases over in Iraq where there might be 40 or 50,000 troops, these are really self-contained communities. They have everything. They even have a Burger King and a Subway. You know, they have swimming pools. So it's the sort of situation where they clearly have the ability and they had the funds to have safer enclosed incinerators. But instead, they were using these open burn pits. We were talking with an expert in this area just last evening, Lauren Price of Veteran Warriors, who was describing, she was stationed over in Baghdad. She said one of the pits was the size of 40 football fields. And this stuff is burning 24 hours a day. Every conceivable type of garbage and toxic substance is just generating this stuff.
So the smoke covers the entire base?
Well, it would cover, I've seen videos of the smoke too. It forms, plumes of smoke going up, but depending on the weather and everything else, it might form like a fog that is just laying close to the land and could easily affect people.
I've had veterans tell me that when they're in these burn pits, you can't see the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's that bad.
Well, we all know how dangerous toxic smoke is. Has Congress said we should have an automatic presumption that if you were exposed to a certain number of hours of burn pit smoke that you should
not yet?
That's a great question. That's the whole problem.
That's the next battle. You got Camp Lejeune. You got the Agent Orange Vietnam vets. You got the Camp Lejeune water contamination issue, which is now law. There's a presumption there. This has got to be the next presumption.
And so far, Congress hasn't taken steps.
No, Congress has not, and the VA is in their let's study it mode.
Have you seen scientific studies that say after so many hours of exposure, then this person has some sort of lung disease or lung problem?
Well, there are experts that the VA has chosen to ignore. And three of those experts were on a documentary. They're interviewed for a documentary called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How American Poisoned Its Soldiers. And one of these doctors, particularly at Vanderbilt University, he was one that the military was sending to. And he had rooms, waiting room full of soldiers returning from the war. And he discovered that they had lung disabilities that were not being detected by your typical, x-rays. You had to do a biopsy, which the military wasn't doing. But he was finding things like constrictive bronchiolitis and other things that would only, particularly for this age group and their medical histories, would be traceable to toxic substance exposure. And so you have experts that will support that. But the VA has taken the position, we don't have enough evidence.
Do you see guys coming to you and gals coming to you every day or every few weeks saying, hey, I was exposed to a burn pit and now you do?
Yeah, I do.
Could you give us an example?
Well, I mean, first thing I do is I sit them down and I say, let's talk about your claims, your disabilities. And the moment they tell me that they were in Iraq or Afghanistan, I'll ask them, are you familiar with burn pits? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I was in them. And they start telling me about these respiratory issues that they have, COPD issues that they have. And we're talking about guys who are men and women who are in their mid-20s with lungs that are 70-year-old lungs. And so we file the claims. And, we got to push it. You can get a doctor. The battle right now is to find a doctor who would then service connect, get that nexus for the veteran because there's no presumption. And then you can, fight for the claim.
Some people have won their claim over exposure to burn pits.
I have not won a claim yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're still in litigation. I mean, trying to find the doctor to put his John Hancock on an opinion can be very difficult. And so you just have to keep fighting him. I mean, most of these veterans, they're young enough that it's worth the fight. I mean, this has been going on 10 years now. You look at what happened with the Vietnam and Agent Orange.
It took forever.
Yeah. Camp Lejeune took forever. That was over 20 years.
Plus the soldiers that were exposed to radiation in the atomic testing.
Right.
Those guys took forever to get any sort of compensation.
We just recently, I think they're going to start doing in 2020, is the Blue Water.
What's Blue Water?
Blue Water are the veterans who served on ships off the coast of Vietnam. if you were out past 2 miles...
12 miles.
12 miles, sorry. If you were out that far out, you were not given the presumption that the other that the veteran who had boots on the ground in Vietnam when it came to Agent Orange. On the other hand, if you ask these veterans who were on these ships, they'll tell you that helicopters came back. These helicopters were loaded with Agent Orange. It was all over the ship. We were breathing this stuff just like everybody else. But Congress said, no, you're not eligible for the presumption.
A big development since we were on the show last year was in January of this year, a federal court decided a case called Procopio versus Wilkie. Wilkie is the secretary of the VA. And it was a big win for the so-called Blue Water Navy veterans, the ones that were in ships pretty far off the coast. And in a 9-2 decision, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit overturned the past decisions which had supported the VA. And they basically said that when Congress wrote the statute that said for Agent Orange purposes, if you were in the Republic of Vietnam, that Congress intended that to include, consistent with international law, not only the land, but it's up to the 12 nautical mile territorial sea limit. So if you serve within that, that decision, the Procopio decision, now protects you. Now, Congress this past summer in June passed a law called the Blue Water Navy Veteran Vietnam or Veterans Act of 2019, and that law basically reinforced what the court decision said. However, the VA is dragging its feet and is saying that that those rules will go into effect in January of 2020, so in a couple months from now. But we'll have to see how much of a fight the VA continues to put up.
So here's the practical consideration. Up until that decision, you had thousands of veterans who are ineligible. They're saying as a result of this new law, you're talking about 90,000 veterans. Think about all the veterans who are deceased who could have. Remember we were talking about it's all about the money?
Right.
It's all about the money.
Well, we're talking with two attorneys that know firsthand because they deal with it every day, veterans' issues from a legal perspective, and they are David Corey and Rick Hurley, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's go to Tim in Lakeland. Tim, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. So I got out of the Navy about 20 years ago. I ran into someone a few years back, said, hey, you know, I help veterans if they've ever had injuries while they serve to help get some benefits. I said, well, actually, I tore my shoulder when I was in. Subsequently, the sling that they gave me was just a cloth sling, put so much pressure on the neck spine area. I've had problems with that ever since. I said, well, hey, you need to get in there and check it out, see, you know, file your claim. I did so. Problem is, a couple of issues is, first of all, I'm not the kind of guy that goes and takes advantage of things. So over the years, I hadn't visited the VA very much. I wanted to leave that for the guys that I thought really needed it. So I was told from the get-go, hey, that's an issue. You haven't been seeing us in here. Secondly, you know, given your age and how long you've been out, you know, natural deterioration of muscles and things, your case isn't looking too good. So I went ahead, filled out all the paperwork. They sent me to what I believe was a third-party doctor, did some x-rays, only did my shoulder, didn't even look at my neck. They started piling all of these appointments on me. I just started a new job. I just could not possibly go to all these appointments or lose my job. So very quickly after having to reschedule an appointment or two, they sent me a letter saying, oh, it's been denied because you missed appointments, this, that, and other. My question is, given what's going on, I mean, even as I'm talking to you, holding this phone, my shoulder hurts. Sleepless nights, my neck, always trying to stretch it out, get rid of the pain. This is directly related to what happened to me when I served. I mean, is it even worth it for me to pursue this? Because I know, again, they're going to try to pile a gazillion appointments on me that I don't know it's worth it for me. I mean, I don't know what to do at this point in time.
I tell every veteran, you have to pursue your claims. You got to do it for yourself. You have to do it for other veterans. You got to keep the system. You got to get these cases into the system. You got to let the VA know that their method of trying to deter you from pursuing your claim is not going to work.
Well, what does he do? I mean, if he's got a regular job, and that means more to him right now than getting some sort of disability, because I assume, Tim, the regular job is going to pay you a whole lot more than the potential disability. Absolutely. So, yes, and you don't really want it. You're not one that is seeking government benefits unless it's absolutely necessary. So
it's important to be service connected, even if it's non-compensable, even if it's 0%.
It's important to establish that it is.
Yeah. So, just get the service connection, because that can help you down the road with medical.
But he doesn't want to go to all these appointments. Is there one trip that he could make to establish that it was service connected?
What the VA is now doing, which is actually, it is helpful, is they have these subcontractors that they've started that will work on Saturdays and Sundays. And they'll make appointments for veterans to come in on the weekends to do these appointments. It's not something that, unfortunately, Tim, it's not something you can call up and say, you know, make an appointment for me for Saturday or Sunday. But if you put the claim in and then you get the phone call saying that we want to schedule you for a Wednesday, you can call them up and say, look, I'm working, I can't come in on Wednesday. Do you have Saturday appointments? Most of them do, because I have a lot of clients who are going on Saturdays now.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know that. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, Tim. Thanks a lot. Good luck, too. And we've got an open line. The number to call is 813-239-9663. If you have a question about the VA and benefits, and maybe you're unhappy with the discharge that you got, our guests, David Corey and Rick Hurley, can answer your question. Let's go to Ray, who's in Englewood. Ray, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
My question is, thank you, by the way, for taking this, is that my fiance, she received a less than honorable discharge, and it was a situation where she was guiding somebody towards marijuana, and she unfortunately also was sexually taken advantage of by her superiors, and she is now trying to get back into the Navy and have this reversed, but the Navy says, well, do you have any medical records of the sexual harassment? And she said, no, because at that time he just didn't do that. And this was, we're talking probably about 40 years ago, 50. And I'm just curious, should she pursue the Board of Veterans Affairs, or what might be the best way to get that charge?
Well, a couple things. She has a couple paths to try to get the discharge characterization upgraded, including the discharge review board for her branch of service, or the board for correction of naval records if she was in the, I think you said that she was in the Navy.
Correct.
Now, it's what you described, unfortunately and tragically, is a common situation where the victims of sexual assault, other sexual offenses, they may not have reported at the time, and there may not be other medical records. However, there could be circumstantial evidence that the VA, by its own regulations, will recognize as being indicators that the person was going through some very traumatic point in time. Maybe their job performance dropped. Maybe they went AWOL. Maybe there was just some other problems. And the fact of self-medication with drugs can be another indicator. What are the circumstances that would indicate that there was something going on? And of course, getting statements from others that she may have confided with are all very important ways to help prove what happened. And keep in mind, the good thing in the VA world, you don't have to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt like you do in a criminal court. And this is very important. The burden of proof is 50-50% likelihood. And if the VA were to say, we think the evidence for and against a particular situation is about balanced, the law is very clear, tie goes to the veteran. So keep that in mind, too. But the key would be, thorough preparation, getting a very detailed statement from the veteran, others that she may have confided in, and others perhaps in the unit that could corroborate. So,
Ray, and tell your fiancé, I have a lot of these types of cases. I mean, a lot. Unfortunately, I would say most of my women veterans were sexually assaulted in the military, and they have the exact same story that Ray's fiance has. And we've been able to build those cases and successfully gotten them compensation for post-traumatic stress as a result of military sexual trauma. So tell her she's got to fight it. There is a path to success. Don't give up.
Should she contact you?
She can contact David or myself, absolutely. I think.
Actually, we're going to give out your phone numbers at the end of the show in just about 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Ray, thanks a lot. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And our guests are David Corey and Rick Hurley. They're they're experts in veterans issues. They're attorneys that practice right here in the Tampa Bay area. And for the last 7 years, they've been coming on or around Veterans Day to answer your questions. Ernie in Port Richey writes, read Kipling's Tommy and you'll know the way it's always been and likely always will be to any veteran facing the VA disability system. Get an experienced advocate, writes Ernie in Port Richey. Yeah. Okay.
I have a practical consideration that, and this is the result of the new law. There are two forms out there. There's VA Form 21-526-EZ and VA Form 20-0995. Okay. Before the new law went into effect, you would file a claim under a 526-B at the time, which is a supplemental claim, and all your claims would go in under one roof, and it was, you'd work them out. Well, not so much anymore. Today, if you are appealing, if you're looking for an increase, if you're reopening an existing claim, a denial of a claim, you have to use Form 20-0995. If you are bringing up a brand new claim, you have to use 21-526-EZ. Why do I bring this to the veterans' attention? Because over the last 18 months, I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten back from the VA when I've used an 0995, or actually, I take that back, when I've used a 526EZ because my veteran says, I've never brought up a mental claim before. Now I get a letter, a boilerplate, very condescending letter from the VA saying, well, we decided that case in 1997, and we denied him PTSD in 1997. The reason I bring that up is if the veteran doesn't have an advocate and they get that letter, most veterans are going to open it up and say, here you go again. It's just another block, mental block to me. Forget about it. I'm just not going to do it. And they take that letter, they put it in the trash, and they don't pursue the claim. You know, do I believe in conspiracies? All I'm saying is they didn't need to create yet another hurdle for veterans to have to overcome.
Yeah, let's go back to the phones because now the phones are jammed. Let's go to Nick in Tampa. Nick, what's your question?
A couple of questions. First, are there any resources on veterans benefits, something like First Veterans Benefits for Dummies or a Florida Bar Practice and Procedure Series like they have for, say, probate, where they have chapters on various parts of the probate process, and attorneys who do that stuff will write the chapter and, you know, explain how that particular thing works. Second, I applied for my aunt to get a aid in attendance pension, and first they rejected it because she didn't, her late husband did not die from a service-connected disability. I said, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. He served in combat. I have all the ID and stuff. So I said, like, I reconsidered. Then they came back and said, oh, your aunt made too much, $30 a month more. Is it possible to resubmit evidence showing that she met the income level, or just do we have to start over again?
David?
Well, Nick, for your first question, there are a lot of resources. Let me first start with what the VA has. If you go to va.gov, in fact, the amount of information there is probably overwhelming, and it's written, it's in several different levels, starting with the most broad, general, written for a general audience, to getting into the weeds of the statutes and regulations.
Okay.
But if you want something outside of the VA, one of the best single volume cases books is called The Veterans Benefit Manual, and it's produced every year by the National Veterans Legal Services program, and I think their website is nvlsp.org, National Veterans Legal Services Program. And that's something that has the level of detail and the information that will satisfy both a layperson as well as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. But there are some other organizations out there, too. So there's lots of information out there. But a good starting point, but not the ending point, is the VA.gov. I would not take the VA as the final word, particularly on some of these issues we've talked about, like the open-air burn pit. But it is useful that you at least get the viewpoint of where the VA is seeing things. And then the Veterans Benefit Manual by the National Veterans Legal Services Program is outstanding. I can't praise that enough.
And what about for his aunt?
For the second question, for aid and attendance, yes, you can resubmit based on changed circumstances, financial circumstances, and the rules are very complicated, and things that, like out-of-pocket medical expenses that can be used to offset her income, you know, those are all things to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But also going back to the service connection issue, that's another thing that needs to be examined closely. To see how, I mean, there are different paths to take to try to service connect a veteran's death. Some cases might be fairly cut and dry, others more complicated. And Rick Hurley and I tend to handle more complicated ones.
I thought that you didn't have to die of a service connected disability for the surviving spouse to get aid and attendance.
For aid and attendance, well, let me clarify. There's a couple different survivor benefits. One is simply needs based, which you're correct. There's another one that is dependency indemnity compensation. Well, the amount of that varies depending on whether the recipient is disabled or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the dependency indemnity compensation, there's about a half dozen situations you can receive that, one of which, the most common, is service-connected.
Yeah.
But going back to the needs-based, Congress and the VA revamped the rules a lot in the last about 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
And with deals with how much income you can have and still qualify, how much property you can have, and also they're looking at rules, because what we were finding is some financial planners, what they were doing was they're somewhat unscrupulous, but they were advising people on how to get rid of their assets to make it appear that they were impoverished when in fact they really weren't. And the VA is not stupid. The government has its ways of checking your records. So anyway, it gets a bit complicated, but it is. It's something that can be reopened.
Okay, and is this show going to be archived?
Yeah, it is, Nick. It'll WMNF.org. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks for your help, and I'll hang up. You can get somebody else's
question. All right, thanks, Nick. Good luck. Let's go to Mike in Sarasota. Mike, we're talking about veterans issues, so what's your question?
Hi. Great show, Rob. I hope this isn't too far off, but I wondered if your guest work with our Congress, work lobbying for better laws, making it easier for the veterans, and if so, has Representative Buchanan been a friend to the veteran? I'll hang up.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Do you guys lobby? Do you offer advice to members of Congress or lobby or anything?
When I go to dinners and I see him, I talk to him, but I don't have time to lobby.
Okay, all right. So no take on...
But we're involved. We network with some organizations that do actively lobby. Military Veterans Advocacy, based in Louisiana, is one that does a lot of lobbying. Lauren Price with Veteran Warriors, we were just talking to last night. She's actively involved on the burn pit issue and also the family caregiver program. As far as your question about Congressman Buchanan, his name does not leap out in my mind as someone that has taken the lead on veteran issues. Congressman Bill Arrakis is one that has, because he was on the committee. It really comes down to who's on the Veterans Committee, either House or the Senate, because that's where the real action is. And I have to say, for the most part, as divided as Congress is and non-productive, one thing, as a general rule, there are exceptions, is there seems to be bipartisan support for veteran stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mike in Sarasota, thanks a lot for that. Let's go to Sam in Clearwater. Sam, we're talking about veterans issues today. What's up? Hi, Sam.
I'm calling about aid and attendance. Not homebound, but what are the qualifications for veterans for aid and attendance? Because I'm hearing a lot of different things. You have to be 100%. You don't have to be 100%. What's the qualifications for aid and attendance for a veteran?
Well, aid and attendance can become confusing because it's used in a couple different contexts, okay? There's aid and attendance that is an add-on to a veteran that is receiving service-connected disability compensation. And in that situation, the veteran needs to get to 100% either by the rating schedule or by individual unemployability. There's also the aid and attendance, which our caller Nick was talking about, which is associated with needs-based pension, and the pension does not have to be because of service-connected disabilities, but it is needs-based, which is basically you're at basically poverty level. And aid and attendance has different levels to it. It's one of the more complicated areas of VA benefits? I know that's just a general answer, but there's a lot of information out there. But the starting point is realize that it's used in two different contexts, one for service-connected stuff and the other for non-service-connected stuff.
And, Sam, do you think you might qualify for aid in attendance?
Yeah. What happened in my case was I went to two of their doctors for the CNP exam. And on the CNP exam, both doctors said that I need aid in attendance. But when I applied, they came back and said that, no, I don't need aid in attendance. But on the thing, it says, you know, when you send your CNP exam results and stuff, it says denied. But then under that, it says does need aid in attendance.
Sam, you got to appeal. That's what I'm going to tell you right now. You have to appeal that, and you'll win.
Okay.
And you'll win
okay.
it.
Okay.
Don't let them be the last voice. Go ahead and appeal.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Sam. Thank you very much. 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. This program will be online after it's over at WMNF.org. So if you're scrambling to write down some of the information, it will be there. Also, some of the links to important news stories about it. Let's go to Bert in Clearwater. Bert, you're on. What's your question for David and Rick?
Yeah, good morning. I'm wondering if you gentlemen are aware of the new problem, a little spin around, but now it's coming up with the forever chemical, PFAS, which is polyfluoroalkyl substance. Is the VA starting to look into that, and would somebody have a claim if they were, like myself in the service, I did in the Navy, I did firefighting training, and we were exposed to that. I'm wondering what's going on with that.
Well, the whole issue of firefighting, the foam and other materials, yeah, that is one of the many toxic substance exposure issues that are getting more attention, and you know, it's like a lot of other VA disability claims. You have to show to be successful. You have to show some event or incident in the service. Like if you were a firefighter and you were exposed to this stuff, you have to show, second of all, some current disability.
Right.
Okay, not just an injury that might have occurred and healed when you were in the service, but a current disability. And the third element is you need to have nexus, a connection, which in some situations involving toxic stuff requires medical or scientific evidence to show that that particular substance is at least as likely as not, 50-50 like percent or greater likelihood, caused a particular disability that you have. That's the short answer.
Yeah, I understand. I think my problem is too. I am currently an aircraft firefighter, and I've been exposed to that stuff since I've been like 17 years old. So there is a lot of concern there, and I hope they look into it because it's a big problem. It's a contaminant that when we do the foam test, it gets in the ground and it stays there, and it contaminates drinking water. So. Something hopefully they could take care of in general. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for your time.
All right, Bert, good luck. Rick, our guests are Rick Hurley and David Corey. Somebody called up and wanted to know the number of the forms that you had mentioned when they're applying. And
if you're applying for a brand new claim, you've never litigated it before, you used VA form 21-526. Capital E, capital Z. And if you're going to file a claim that you've already filed that was maybe previously denied, or you got a low rating and you want to appeal the rating, you want an increase, you want to use form 20-0995.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to John in Sarasota. John, unfortunately, we just have about 30 seconds. What's your question?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could... if you've already tried a case in the state and you feel like you were judged improperly, can you appeal that case and do it through the VA?
Are you talking about like a state court, like criminal action? Because that would be important to know what's the context of your question.
Yeah, it was a felony, and I feel like my rights were violated, and I was definitely... railroad to do the whole thing. So,
well, that would be something within the state court, and the so-called veterans court that we were talking about earlier is a division within the state court system. It's not run by the VA. They work in conjunction with the VA to help veterans in certain kind of cases.
So So you couldn't appeal it through the VA court?
Not a criminal conviction in the state court, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, John. Okay. Rick Hurley, if people want to phone you, you're an attorney. You do a lot of veterans work.
That's all I do.
Okay. So what's your phone number, Rick Hurley?
727-612-1515.
727-612-1515. And David Corey?
Area code 813-662-0760. That's 662-0760.
All right. Well, David Corey and Rick Hurley, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks.
See you
again,
next
Rob.
Veterans
thank you,
Rob. Day.
Yeah, thank you very much for having
thank
us.
Thank you for doing the work you do. Thanks to Jan Simpson for being our phone producer today. There's a little construction going next door, so this air studio has been particularly noisy today. But this program will be online soon at WMNF.org. This is WMNF Tampa.